So we are holding on Lamed Beis Amud Beis by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, the Shana Emrin, Lo Yimona Yisro Imakoyan Labachor, Halabachor, it says on the side, a Yisro is not allowed to be invited over to take a portion of a Bachor together with a Koyan. In other words, we know a Bachor you give to the Koyan. If it's a Tom, then in the times of the Beit Mikdash, you bring it to the Korban. Whether in the times of the Beit Mikdash or nowadays, if it develops a mum, then the Koyan, you give it to the Koyan, it's the Koyan's property, he can shecht it and eat it himself, he could resell it, etc. But we're talking about here, the Koyan shechted it, and the Shammai is saying that Yisrael is not allowed to eat. In that sense, yeah, we're going to see in the Gemara. Not really like Truma, but they compare it to portions of Korbanos. But we'll see. You can't invite guests to a Yisrael, according to this channel. Right.
Or if he's there and he doesn't eat from the...
Okay, obviously, if he's there and he doesn't eat, we're not talking about. What we mean is, in other words, you can't invite a Yisrael to share in the Bechor, or Bethilo Makirim, Bethilo says, Mutter, Ba'afilu, or Bechavim, and they say, not only you can give meat of it to a Yid, you can even give meat of it to a goat. There are some Achronim who want to say that maybe you can only give it to him in a Bechavadika way, like if you're inviting him as a guest, maybe not in a less Kavadika way, like selling it to him. Other Achronim don't make that distinction. Okay. So the most also, Masnitin Mani Rabbi Akiva. Who does our Mishnah go like in its version of the Macholikus, the Shammai and the Sobel? That is according to Rabbi Akiva's version of their Macholikus. The Tani, as we learn in the Braisa, Bechur ein nimnin olav el chabur shkula koyinim, divir b'shamai. B'shamai says, which fine, that's the same as an on Mishnah, that only a group of all koyinim can join in together to eat from the Bechur. Or b'tilo oim rafidu zorim, whereas in this Braisa, b'tilo says that even zorim, meaning Yisraelim or Levim, can eat it, but apparently not goyim. Rabbi Akiva matches after the Oath of Sodom. Rabbi Akiva, he's not arguing with the Tillel, he's not arguing with the Shammai and the Tillel. There were a couple of generations before him, but he's saying his version of the Tillel is after the Oath of Sodom that even a goy would be allowed to eat it. So our Mishnah that presents the Machloikas as that the Shammai says Koyanim only, and the Tillel says even goyim, that's Rabbi Akiva's version of the Machloikas. Who is the halacha like, by the way? Knew the older Rishonim passed in, well, obviously like Bethilo, but which version of Bethilo? Bethilo in the Mishnah or Bethilo in the Braisa? Knew the old of the Rishonim passed in like Bethilo in the Mishnah, that even a goy, in other words, Rabbi Akiva's version, in particular, Tosis points out, because if you have a stam in a Mishnah, and a machloikas in the Braisa, usually the halacha is like the Mishnah. In other words, if it was meant to be, the halacha is not like it, then Rebbe would have presented it in the Mishnah that way. That Rabbi Akiva says, this is how Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel hold respectively. The fact that he made it a stam Mishnah implies the halacha is like that. So Tosis, because
the mayor agrees with that.
Not because of mayor, but because the Mishnah is written as a stam Mishnah, and therefore that implies the halacha is meant to be like that.
So we
go according to what it says in the Mishnah that... So even a goy is allowed to eat it. Right. And Tosfos just mentions the Bahag argues with that and says that maybe the Bahag, which is one of the early goyim, says that no, maybe the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, is like the Chachamim's version of it in the Braisa. Okay, but the majority of Rishonim and Achronim paskin not like the Bahag. The Bahag, Baal Halacha is Gjolus. It's a safer of halacha. It's actually kind of a kisser of Shas. It basically takes the sort of like the Rif. It takes the sugya of the Gemara and extracts from it the relevant parts of the halacha and takes out most of the Shakam Talia and the Agadka and so forth. So it's a very well respected sefer. It's from one of the early goyim, either from a Yehudoi goyim or a Shimon Tayar or whatever. It's a major source in halacha. However, not always is the halacha paskin like it. Anyway.
It doesn't give you the reasoning.
He says no. He doesn't give most of the reasoning. You want the reasoning? You look in the Gemara. He mostly gives the bottom line halacha. My time into Beis Shammai. Now, why does Beis Shammai say that only Koyanim can eat from the Bechor? So like this, the Sodom Yalach Begomer, because the Pasuk says the meat of the Bechor, their meat, meaning Tam and Balmum, should be to you, and the Pasuk continues, it should be to you like Chazei HaTnufa and like the Shoit HaTzruma, like the chest and leg of the animal, of the Shlomim, or the Toda, whatever, that are given to Koyanim. Therefore, so the Shammai says, you have a hekesh. Ma hakam koyanim ein Yisraeloi. Only koyanim are allowed to eat the pos of a shoik. Yisraelim are not. Achacha koyanim ein Yisraeloi. The same thing over here with the Bechor. Then it means only koyanim can eat it and Yisraelim cannot.
Is it
in Tarshish Koyanach? It's listing over there almost all of the 24 Matas Kahuna. So as I mentioned over there about the bechor, that it says that the meat of them should go to you like the chaza and shrek.
Can you all agree that the kind of take carbon? This is the carbon itself,
it's
no problem.
No. If it's a tam and it's going to be brought to the carbon, you can't. You have to bring it to the carbon. That's that.
But if it has a mum,
so we're saying, so we learned in the previous Mishnah and the Gemara on it that you're allowed to sell the meat of it. You're not allowed to sell it while it's alive. We said lo yigoil, but you can sell it after it's chested. But yeah, according to Bechama, you could still only sell it to other kohen. According to Bechila, you could sell it to Yisrael.
So when
the
kohen is given that a kohen or
Meister. Yeah, is different. First of all, Meister Behema doesn't go to the kohen. Meister Behema, the owner himself keeps the Meister Behema. If it's a tam, he brings it as a korban. If it's a baal mum, he himself can shecht it and eat it.
When the kohen gives the kohen cannot do what he wants.
So according to Bishamai, no. According to Bishamai, ultimately only a kohen can eat it. So fine. But actually, I shouldn't say that we can't sell it while it's alive. We said in the Gemara actually that you could sell the bechor while it's alive. You just can't be poyed yet. You know, you can't take off the kedusha. The kedusha is going to remain on it until you give it to the kohen. But once you give it to the kohen, so yeah. So according to Bishamai, is saying over here that ultimately only kohen can eat it. So therefore, fine. The kohen wants to resell it to a Yisrael. Maybe according to Bishamai, he could. But eventually, the Yisrael is going to have to resell it to a kohen. Or give it to a kohen, whatever.
Ultimately,
that's be eaten by kohen. And the reason why Bishamai is saying that, again, is because the pasuk compares it to chaz of a shoik, and chaz of a shoik can only be eaten by kohenim and their immediate family. In fact, we have the concept even in last week's parasha. You have the case over there of a bas kohen who marries a Yisrael, and later on her husband dies or divorces her. They don't have children, so we say she's allowed to go back to eating truma, melechem of Yisrael, but even then, she's not allowed to ever eat chaz of a shoik again. Once she married a Yisrael, that's it. She can never again eat from her father's chaz of a shoik. So even if she divorces the Yisrael, et cetera, yeah. The truma chazeres vein chazeres for chaz of a shoik. Gosh, you mentioned it over there. Okay.
Starom, in that context, refers
specifically
to the
Bechor. To the Bechor, yeah. Or Bechor. So what would Bechor answer to that? They would say, Hanimi Likam. Sure, of course you have a hekesh with chaz of a shoik, but that's only talking about a tam, because that's what the pasuk is talking about. The previous pasuk says that domim tizrik al mizbeach, that's chelbom tatu. You should sprinkle their blood on the mizbeach and burn their chelev, which obviously is only talking about a tam, because the baal mum you don't bring as a korban. So in that case, then the pasuk is saying that only kohenim can eat the meat of it, and as we say in Ezer Mekoyman, habchor nechal a kohenim ba meisel harder. Yeah, av a baal mum, but when it comes to a baal mum, then you have a different pasuk. You have a different pasuk in Parashas Re'eh that says that the Tomei and the Tahor can eat it together. So we see already that it's not doesn't have quite the same rules as Kodshim, and therefore Beis Hillel is going to learn from that that it means not only a Koyan is Tomei, but even Zorim, as we're going to go on to say. For a Balmum, we're talking about. So that's the thing. So Bishamai would say the Hekesh applies to both a Tam and a Balmum, but Bishamai would say it applies only to a Tam. Tosfos points out, it is true that the word Besorim, which is in plural, it means their Bosor, refers in a certain sense to both the Tam and the Balmum, but that's as far as certain dinim. There are certain dinim that we learn from that apply both to the Tam and the Balmum, including the fact that you have to give both of them to the Kohen. But not necessarily, but so we're going to be saying, when it talks about eating them, then we're going to say on the basis of the Kavu Chomer that we're going to bring now, that it must be mutter for Zorim to eat them. How does this learn that? They say, Umat Tomei Shein Oichu B'Kodshim Kalim Oichu B'Bachor, Madach HaZor, Umat Tomei Shein Oichu B'Kodshim Kalim Oichu B'Bachor, Madach, a person who's Tomei, is not allowed to eat Kodshim Kalim, he can't eat Shlomim, he can't eat Maiser, he can't eat Pesach, and yet Oichu B'Bachor, yet you're telling me, and the Pasuk says, Tomei Bator Yachtov, that a Tomei person is able to eat the Bechor, and even you, Beis Shammai, have to agree to that, because the positive. Well, that's fine, but still we're saying we're not talking about a Tam, we're talking about Mum. Zor, Sha'ocha, B'Kodshim Kalim. Well, then if a Zor is able to eat from Kodshim Kalim, a Zor can eat Shlomim, or most of a Shlomim, a Zor can eat from Mai to Behema, a Zor can eat a Kodim Pesach. No, not if he's Tomei, we're talking about if he's Tar. Shouldn't it be a kavachomer that he should be able to eat from a bechor? So therefore, they say to Beis Shammai, if you yourself agree that even a kohen who's tomei can eat from a bechor, then this kavachomer should tell you that so can a zar, because a zar shouldn't be worse than a tomei. because we just said because that's what we just said. Kohen Tome is not allowed to eat Kodshim Kalim, but he's allowed. But you, Beshamai, are saying hello. He's allowed. Welcome back. He's allowed to eat a bechor. Yet he's allowed to eat a bechor because Hatome Vator Yachdav Yechlanu. So then, how much more so when it comes to a zar? A rare zar is even able to eat Kodshim Kalim. However, however, you could try to slug up that kavachomer. You could argue malatome shekin hutter mitzvah ba'avodah tzibur. But Shammai would answer to that, sure, but you know what? You find that a tome, there's a different exception also. You find that a tome, you have a rule that they're able to do the avodah by a korban tzibur. We know the korban pesach is brought for tumah. We know that all korbanos tzibur shekavur lahen zman, for example, the tmidim, the mustafim, or whatever, are brought even if the koyanim are tome, etc. So therefore, obviously, you have an exception for a tome. So but Shammai is going to say, okay, so then that same exception. We'll go with that. Fine. The point is, once you find an exception by Tomei that you don't have by Zor, you never find that a Zor is able to do the Avodah, but you do find where Tomei is able to do the Avodah. So Beit Shammai is saying, therefore, your Kavach Chomer falls apart. Or Beit Hillel, what would Beit Hillel answer to that? They would say, sure, okay, of course, a Tomei has an advantage over a Zor when you're talking about an Avodah, but Otu Ba'Avodah Chomer. But we're not talking about Avodah over here. Ba'Achila Chomer, we're talking over here about eating the animal, and we're talking about even at the Balmum, and it's a Balmum, it's not even being brought as a carbon. Therefore, Achilas Zor Odif. Therefore, the fact that a Zor is able to eat them is, as far as eating, a Zor is stronger, because as we just said, there's no exception where you don't have an exception where a Tomei is allowed to eat something and a Zor is not allowed. You have, actually, it is true if a carbon Pesach is brought to Tomei, you can eat it for Tomei, but then the Zor can eat the carbon Pesach also. You're in the wrong reception. So therefore, Beit Hillel saying, when it comes to Avodah, sure, of course you have an advantage for the Tomei over the Zor. But when it comes to Achila, you don't ever have a case where Tomei is allowed to eat something and a Zor shouldn't be allowed. Once we have a pasuk that tells us that the Tomei can eat a Bechor Balmum, then why should the Zor be excluded? So therefore, that's how Beit Hillel gets their deen. So that's how they would answer Beit Shammai. So that explains the Chachamim's version of Beit Hillel, where they're saying that he's true. Wait a minute, the Mishnah said that Beit Shammai says that Yisrael is not allowed to eat a Bechor, and the Sol says that not only is Yisrael is allowed to even a Goy is major. Okay, so that's where we get the Tanakama, not Tanakama, that's where we get the Chachamim in the Braisa, that's where we get their version of Beit Hillel, that a Yisrael is allowed to eat it. Because Beit Hillel makes a Kal v'chomer, if a Yisrael is allowed to eat Kodshim Kalim, whereas a Tomei is not, then surely they should be allowed to eat a Bechor where a Tomei can. Now, what about Rabbi Akiva's version? Rabbi Akiva matir v'afilo eretz yichovim. We said Rabbi Akiva allows, in the Braisa we said it's Rabbi Akiva, and the Mishnah we just added as a Stam Mishnah, that Rabbi Akiva says that Beit Hillel holds that even a goy is allowed to eat from the Bechor. My time is Rabbi Akiva. Now, why does Rabbi Akiva say that? So the reason is because the Pasuk compares this Bechor Balmum to Katsvi Bechor Ayol. It compares it to a Tzvi and an Ayol, a deer and a gazelle, or whatever the exact species are, whatever, two kinds of wild animals. Meaning ma tzvi v'ayol mutar lo'ovid k'chovim. So therefore, he says, we learn from that, therefore, just like a tzvi and an ayol are allowed to be eaten by goyim, there's obviously no iser on them, on a regular tzvi and ayol, there's no iser for a goy to eat it. Ach psulim mutar lo'ovid k'chovim, ach b'chor, it says on the side, so the same thing, psulim amokdash, or not psulim amokdash, and in general, what we're talking about over here, b'chor, that's possible, because the balmum would be mutar to a goy also. The idach.
So therefore, by that
hefesh to three an aisle, we see therefore that b'chor balmum must be mutter to a goy as well, just like the pasuk is telling you. You're allowed to eat it like a three and an aisle. A goy is allowed to eat a three and an aisle. Therefore, a goy is allowed to eat a b'chor balmum. Ve'idach, what would the other two three an aisle, because that's how it's compared in the pasuk. Ve'idach, what would the Tanakama of the Braisa, who's their version of it still excludes the goy, what would they answer to that? They would say, they would say, look, in the Pesukim it says three times you have the comparison to Tzvi and Ayol. Now, three times in Parashat Re'eh, you have about different situations that you have something that's compared to Tzvi and Ayol. So what do we use those drashas for? Chav l'chidur of Yitzchak v'rab Oishia. The first one teaches us what Rab Yitzchak and Rab Oishia say. Now, what do Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbi Oshia say? So Rashi says, I don't know what they said. Tosfos brings over here from Rabbeinu Hanano elsewhere, and in Sefer HaYosher, it says it's actually from Rabbeinu Tam, and the Ritva adds that Rabbeinu Tam figured this out shortly before he passed away, that the two things of Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbi Oshia are two dinim that they mention without giving a source for them in Makos, where it says over there that so you have two dinim. One is that if a person plows with an animal of Psula Amokdashin, then they get Malkus. And the other one is that if a person is Marbia, if a person breeds an animal of Psula Amokdashin, then they also get Malkus. Now, why is that? So the reason is based on what we're saying over here, that we're comparing Psula Amokdashin to Tzvi and Ayo. The point is, Psula Amokdashin are compared to as if they were two different species. Shuta Mokobetis brings it over here. Guf Echad. In each case, the Psula Amokdashin is one animal. It's one animal that's a Bechor Balmum or a Shlomim that became a Balmum or what have you. And the Pasuk considers it like a Tzvi and like an Ayo. In other words, the Pasuk is considering it as if it's two Gufim in one. Therefore, if you plow with it, automatically you're plowing with Kalayim. Therefore, you get Malchus. If you breed it, you're breeding Kalayim. Therefore, Malchus. So those are the dinim of Rabbi Yitzchok and Rabbi Oshia. V'chad l'chidur Rabbi Lazar HaKaper. The second one teaches us the concept that Rabbi Lazar HaKaper says, which is, we learned in Cholin, that the comparison actually goes the other way around. Since we're comparing a behemoth of Psula Amokdashin to Tzvi and Ayil, it's not that we're learning something from Tzvi and Ayil to behemoth, but rather the other way around, from behemoth, which we know that a behemoth requires shchita, because the pasuk says it's a vachter kasher tzitzicha. From that, we learn that a chaya also requires shchita, because otherwise you don't have any pasuk that says that kosher wild animals require shchita. We learn it. Rabbi Elazar HaKaper is saying from this hekesh in the pasuk. Now, you have two different deer stories over here because we mentioned there are three psukim.
So
one hekesh from behemoth to chaya. So teaching us just like a behemoth requires shchita, so does a chaya.
And therefore,
so that's it. So now, one second. So you have the next word in the Gemara over here is the idach. The idach means the other one. So what do we mean the other one? There are two ways of explaining what the word the idach over here means. And it depends basically on the girsa that we have in the previous line. You see over here, you have in parenthesis, v'chad l'chidrev, and then you have in brackets, v'rab oshia. So the question is it that we're saying we're using one Tzvi and Ayil for the dinim that Rabbi Yitzchok and Rabbi Oshia mentioned? In other words, we're considering that effectively the same din, because in both cases we're saying that Psula Amokdashin is considered like two behemoths in one, two chayas in one, whatever. Then the second one we would be using for Rabbi Elazar HaKaper, and the idach would be what we'd be using the third pasuk for. That's one way of understanding it. The other way of understanding it is that we would say Rabbi Yitzchok and Rabbi Oshia are two separate dinim, and we're learning them from two separate Tzvi and Ayil. And then the third one we're using for Rabbi Elazar HaKaper's din. And then the idach means the other opinion, meaning we'd have to say, so what is Rabbi Akiva answering to that? If we're saying that we're using all three psukim for different drushas, then how does he have Tzvi and Ayil available to teach us what we're saying over here, that Tzvi and Ayil is mutter to goyim, and therefore so is this? And the answer is, mas Tzvi v'ayil p'turim min abachorah, aksulam akdashin p'turim min abachorah. He would say that what it means is, Tzvi and Ayil are potter from b'chorah. So therefore, we learn from that that also Psula Amokdashin and also Matonis, Shita Mokobetis adds, you know, to give Zerah L'chayayim B'keva from them, Ach Psula Amokdashin, Keturim and Abachorah, so is also with Psula Amokdashin. So in other words, you have the Tzvi and Ayil comparison between different Psula Amokdashin, and Bechorah and whatever, and one of them, we're learning that Tzvi and Ayil are potter from Bechorah, and therefore so are Psula Amokdashin, and Rabbi Akiva is saying that we're learning from Tzvi and Ayil to Tosfos on the previous Amud, the long Tosfos there. Psak mentions that maybe what it is in order how does Rabbi Akiva have an extra positive? He says because after all you have two things, Tzvi and Ayil. So maybe Rabbi Akiva is learning one thing from Tzvi and the other one from Ayil. You don't need to compare it to both Tzvi and Ayil, for example, to say that it's Potter from Bechorah. Tzvi all by itself is Potter from Bechorah. Ayil all by itself is Potter from Bechorah. Therefore, you have one available to teach us as Potter from Bechorah and Matonis, and the other one to teach us that you can give it to a guy.
How are you considering the second of Bechorah?
That's the point. Since Tzvi and Ayil is Potter from Bechorah, therefore we're learning that other Psula Amokdashin, not Bechorah, other Psula Amokdashin, if I have an animal of a shlum, and it develops a mum, later on it becomes pregnant and gives birth to its first baby, and it's a male, that baby is not a Bechorah. Because we're comparing the mother, which is Psula Amokdashin, to Tzvi and Ayil. And therefore, there's no din of b'chur on that animal at all. So then you don't even need. Then you don't even need what Rabbi Akiva is saying over here that a goy can eat the b'chur because it's not even considered a b'chur. Okay. So those are the different opinions about who can eat the b'chur and who can't. Okay. Let's go on. Tana Rabbanan. We learn in a b'raisa. B'chur en ma'achil en oisul en nidos. Divrei Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai. Now, before we were saying that a tomei is allowed to eat a b'chur. And he said, because you have a pulpit for you, so even Beit Shammai has to agree to that. But now we're going to say that Beit Shammai is limiting, is qualifying that as well. Not all kinds of tmeim can eat a b'chur, according to Beit Shammai. So b'chur ein ma'achil anoisu l'nidos, divrei Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai would say that you're not allowed to give meat of a b'chur to a woman who's nida, even if she's the wife or daughter of a kohen. Or v'til lo ma'achil anoisu l'nidos, v'til says you are allowed to. My time is a Beit Shammai, so okay, why does Beit Shammai say? So again, because the same pasuk we quoted before. Or Sodom Yiloch, again, for the same pasuk that we quoted before. The meat of the Bechor is for you, the Kohenim, like Chazei Atznufa and Lashay Katsurama.
Maybe it's coming finally also.
Yeah, well, yeah, Lecha, meat, yeah. Well, because you have, in the Tzukim over there, it mentions that Lecha, or Vonecha, or Vnesecha. So yeah, so it is for the Kohen family as well. That's we say in Ezra Mekoyman, that Bechor Nechal Kohenim, Bamais Lecha Adam, Bechol Ir, Bechol Machol, yeah, so it can be eaten by their family, yeah. But Beit Shammai is saying that still, since the pasuk is comparing it to Chaz V'Shoik, Ma Hosam Nidos Loi, now when it comes to Chaz V'Shoik, a Nida is not allowed to eat it, because in general, a Tomei is not allowed to eat Chaz V'Shoik, Afocham Nidos Loi, so the same thing here, a Nida is not allowed to eat it either. Tosfos actually says that when we say a nida, we don't mean only a nida. The same thing would be a balkeri. The same thing would be a balkeri, as the Gemara is going to say soon. Anyone who's tumah yotz to all of megufa, as the Gemara is going to say soon. Anyone where the tumah comes out of their own body. And the point is that he brings from Torah Chaim. So why do we mention only nidus? Because there's a bigger chiddush in it according to Beit Hillel. A balkeri, maybe there's not so much of a chiddush. Okay, he's only tell me for one day anyway. But a nidus, he's tell me for 7 days. You would think maybe Beit Hillel excludes her. No, we say that not. Okay. So therefore, so they can't eat chaz v'shoik. Therefore, they can't eat b'chor. Or Beit Hillel, what would Beit Hillel answer to that? Hani mi l'tam. Again, that hekish with chaz v'shoik is only referring to the tam, like we said before. But when it comes to the tam, when it comes to bal mum, then you have the pasuk that says tam and tam can eat it together.
See, some is still better arguing if it's the bride,
well, if you divide between tam and bal mum, rather, not between tam and tam, between tam and bal mum. Right, everybody agrees. If it's tam, then only the kohenim who are tahor and their families who are tahor can eat it, right? Or Beit Shammai. Now, what would Beit Shammai answer to that? What are they, after all, the pasuk does say, Atoma v'Atoro Yachtov. They would say, fine, there are only certain kinds of tmeim. Hani mili hecha de'en tumor yotza ola megufoi. When would we say that a tomei can eat the b'chur of Balmum? Because after all, the pasuk says, Atoma v'Atoro Yachtov, Yechlenu, so they're still alive, Beit Shammai has to do something with that pasuk. Fine, that only refers to when tumor is not coming out of a person's own body. In other words, for example, when their tomei met, no, as long as also tumor comes out of their body. But for example, if they're tomei sheret, for example, tomei nevela, etc.
Zava,
nida, yelada, malkeri, the third, I guess, also, No, well, the point is it comes from his own body. It's not something external that touched him. And in fact, the third one we're going to mention too. Aval hecha the tumah yotza ala megufoi, but as Shammai would say, where the tumah is coming out of his own body, then not. Then we don't have a heter to eat the b'chor.
Even though it's very
funny. No, that's according to Beit Hillel. That's according to Akiva's version of Beit Hillel. We're talking according to Beit Shammai over here. Beit Shammai, who says that only a kohen is allowed to eat it, they're saying, furthermore, within that, if the kohen is tumah, they're allowed to eat it only depending what kind of tumah it is. Is it tumah yotza ala megufoi? Then not. Is it tumah not yotzei migufoi? Are they tumah by a mess or a sheretz or what have you? Then fine, they can eat it.
They have to be a kohen, tar, or tumah.
Or tumah with the kind of, right. And, okay. To eat the b'chor bal mum. Again, if it's a b'chor tam, then there's nothing to talk about. Only the kohenim and their families who are tahor can eat it.
Even b'chor tam?
No, even a b'chor bal mum.
Even that, that's
Right. Basically, what Beit Shammai is going to do is they're going to compare it with the Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach, we have a similar concept. That we know when the Korban Pesach is brought b'trumah, uniquely among all korbanos you eat at b'trumah, usually the rule is, fine, korbanos tibur, trumah is d'chulya or hutra, as the case may be, but nevertheless, you don't eat at b'trumah. But the Korban Pesach is an exception. The Mishnah says in Psachim that the whole purpose of the Korban Pesach is to be eaten. Therefore, if it's brought b'trumah, if most of the tibur is tameh, then you eat at b'trumah as well. But even then, only certain kinds of tameim are able to eat it. The same distinction. So therefore, so the point is, Beth Shammai would say, Aval hecha the tumah yotza olam migufoy, loy, if the tumah comes out of his own body, then not. And how do we know, Beth Shammai says, where do we see to make such a distinction between different tmeim? The ashkechon, the polig, rachmana, because we find that the Torah does make such a distinction in a different context. Vein tumah yotza olam migufoy, levein shein tumah yotza olam migufoy. We find a different context than when it comes to korbanos, where the Torah makes such a distinction, where a person that ain tumah yotza olam migufoy is allowed to eat a korban, and the person who tumah yotza olam migufoy is not allowed. Where do we see that? That's fine. Fine, but once we see that distinction, so because Beth Shammai is going to say that. Beth Shammai is that's fine, but nevertheless, Beth Shammai is going to say the same, that if we have a pasuk, fine, we have a pasuk that tells us that a tameh is allowed to eat a balmum. However, Beth Shammai is going to say, we're going to make a binyan av from Pesach, basically. We're going to say, just like by Pesach, we find that there's a distinction between different tomatoes, so also over here. You're going to say that a tomato can eat it, fine. We can't argue with a positive, but we're going to limit it to what to the same kind of tomato that can eat according to Pesach. It's not, as we learn in a Mishnah and Pesachim. A Pesach shabba b'trumah, if the Korban Pesach is brought b'trumah, if most of the tzibur is tomato, so even though the people who are tomeh nets are able to eat from it, lo yochlu menu zavim u'mitzarayim v'zavis v'nidus v'yoldus. Nevertheless, zavim and mitzarayim and zavos and nidus and yoldus are not allowed to eat from it. So the same thing over here. But Shammai says that, yes, now it's not a korban anymore. It is a balmum, but nevertheless, it still has, to that extent, a certain din of a korban, and therefore, even if you're going to say that there's an exception that a tomeh can eat it, it's going to be the same exception that you have about a korban case. Which is only Tumah, not if Tumah Yotza Olam Migufoy, exactly. Or Beis Hillel, now what would Beis Hillel answer to that? They would say, the difference is, Hosam hu degali rachmona, tmei nefesh. Yeah, but by the Korban Pesach, you have a specific pasuk that says that the tmei nefesh is mutter. How so? Because in the parasha of Pesach Sheni, yesterday having been Pesach Sheni, So it says over there, ish ki yi tomei lanefesh, ish actually it says, if any person is tomei lanefesh, then they bring a Pesach Sheni, which is where we learn that only an ish brings a Pesach Sheni, but the tzibur, if most of the tzibur does not bring a Pesach Sheni, if most of the tzibur is tomei, then they still bring the regular Pesach. So therefore, tomei nefesh, there's an exception, but not when it comes to Tumah of Zava and so forth. So therefore, over there, you have a specific reason to distinguish between Tomei Nefesh versus Tumei Yotza Olam Migufoy. Because the Pasuk says Tomei Nefesh, Aval Hocha Tomei Stomach Siv. But over here, by the Bechor, the Pasuk just says that Tomei Vater Yachter V'Yechvanu. So it just says Tomei generically. Therefore, there's no difference between different kinds of Tomei, and therefore every kind of Tomei can eat it.
And over
there, it says Tomei Nefesh. And that means the person who's Tomei from a dead body. So therefore, fine. Over there, you have a different. There you see the Torah is distinguishing between different kinds of tmeim. If most of the tibur are tomeim mess, then they bring pesach rishon. But let's say most of them are zovim, they do not. So the same thing. And the same thing as far as eating it. So fine. Over there, you have that distinction. But by bechor, the Torah is not making any such distinction. Therefore, Beit Hillel is saying we're not going to accept your distinction, Beit Shammai, between tumah yotza olam migufoy and not. The Torah says that a tomeh can eat a bechor means any kind of tumah. So the halacha is like Beit Hillel, obviously. And again, according to almost all the Rishonim, the halacha is like the Akiva's version of Beit Hillel, that even a goy is allowed to eat it. According to the Bahag, the halacha is like the Chachamim's version of Beit Hillel, that a Yisrael, a Zor, is allowed to eat it, and a Tomei is the thing over here, but not a goy. The halacha in Shulchan Aruch is brought like the majority of Rishonim, that anybody can eat it, Jew or goy. As I said before, there are a couple of the Achronim, the Ben Ish Chai, for example, and a couple of others want to say that maybe you're only allowed to give it to a goy in a kavodik way, like inviting him as a guest, but not, let's say, like selling it to him. But most of the Achronim don't accept that distinction either.
Now, in Israel, they typical farmers, how do they deal with before?
Well, yeah, they do, as we learned in the beginning of the Masechta and in the beginning of the second Teres. Yeah, they just say to Mechiras Behemam Lakeres. Delta Rebbe actually describes it after say to Mechiras Thomas. Delta Rebbe says, Me'inyan La'inyan, let's talk about say to Mechiras Behemam Lakeres and how you do it in a way that's valid. Yeah. So I guess there are always minority. I guess there's always a minority that don't, but in general, as far as I know, by and large, that's what they do. Because otherwise, yeah, you have to wait till it develops the womb, and meanwhile, there could be takala, you might end up working it, you might end up shearing it. Yeah. That's true, and in a couple of blocks, when we talk about how you check a womb, we're going to talk about what we do nowadays as far as womb. We'll get to it on that one as well. Because it's not just in Eretz Yisrael. The dinim of Bechor, Behemah, Tahara apply everywhere in the world. Practically speaking, you have more Jewish farmers in Eretz Yisrael, but more Jews raising livestock. Normally, what people do is they do Seder Mechiras Behemah HaMvakeres. If they have an animal that's about to give birth to its first to its firstborn, they arrange to arrange a partnership. They arrange to sell the mother to a goy, or to sell part of the mother to a goy, whatever, before the baby is born, and that way the baby doesn't have to purchase Bechorah, as we learned at the beginning of the second parent. There is another possibility, which we're going to talk about in a couple of blocks, Bez Hashem, I think on Def Lamed Hey, Lamed Vav also, so we're going to talk about a concept that maybe what you can do is you can make a mum in the Bechor before it's born. Because, again, before until it's born, it doesn't have to purchase Bechor. So we'll get to those in a few blocks, Bez Hashem. When it's still in the womb, yeah, you could reach in, and then, yeah. Okay.
Did we see the animals talking to each other about other Rishon and other Sheni
no.
Older than you?
No.
We didn't do that.
We didn't
yet.
Get that then.
Coming?
I think it's coming in the last there, actually, but we'll see. Okay.
That's my favorite part.
Okay. Onward. You know what? You want to talk about that? I mean, you have Mishnayos and Kalim, where you have inanimate objects that are talking to each other. Mitamecha lo timuni v'ata timesani, like so to speak, like you have something is able, like one Kali is able to say to the other, what was Mitame you wasn't able to be Mitame me, but you yourself were able to be Mitame me. Things like that. But yeah, sometimes the Mishnah will personify things to express the. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Yeah. Okay. Can't you learn a song? Okay. Turn it up on. We learn in a brisa. Ein magilin b'yomtiv. You're not allowed to be margilin on Yom Tov. So now we know you're allowed to shecht an animal on Yom Tov. Nowadays, in practice, they don't do it for various reasons, but in principle, off Yalacha, you're allowed to shecht on Yom Tov. However, now when you shecht an animal, you strip off the skin. And we learned about this in Chulin. You have different ways of stripping off the skin. The normal way of doing it is you make a cut down the belly, down the back, down the front side of the animal, and then you take the skin, then you peel the skin off, like taking off a coat. Sometimes you want to have the skin is intact all the way around in order, for example, you can use it as a water skin or whatever. So then one way of doing it is, we learned over there, it's called margilin, which is that you basically kind of peel off the skin like pulling off a sweater or something, taking it down the animal and eventually taking it off the legs. According to the Rambam, actually, it's even more than that. Magulin would be that you make sure to take all of the skin, eventually you get it so that it's all hanging from one leg, and then you take it off from there. That's magulin. And the point is, the only openings in it are the neck opening and the leg openings, and those you can easily sew up. So you're not allowed to do that on Yom Tov because not necessary. It's a tircha for Yom Tov. Not so much because making a keli, because you're doing a tircha that's unnecessary for Yom Tov. You're allowed to shecht on Yom Tov because melechas eichel nefesh, because you want to have the meat for Yom Tov. But to do margilin like that, that's not necessary to eat the meat, and therefore you're not allowed to do it. Kayotidboi, ein margilin v'bechor v'lodus tzolam akdashin. Similarly, you're not allowed to do this margilin when it comes to a bechor, or when it comes to tzolam akdashin. So let's figure out. Well, there's obviously. So obviously, yeah, we're talking about on weekdays, right? So, okay, the Shlema Yom Tov, okay, I can understand why you're not allowed to do it on Yom Tov, because you're doing a Tircha on Yom Tov that's unnecessary for Yom Tov. Because, you know, you're not going to be making anything of that out of that skin on Yom Tov anyway. El B'chor Man Tana, which Tana would be saying that you can't do that by a B'chor? Amr Chista Beit Shammai. So Rav Chista says specifically that would be according to Beit Shammai of our Mishnah and our Sugya. The Omar, where Beit Shammai just said, "Ein ma'achil and oisel nidah." They said that a bechor bal mum, you're not even allowed to feed it to a nidah, or anyone who tuma yosel the megufa. In other words, Beit Shammai is considering this animal, this bechor bal mum, as if it still had a certain degree of kedusha, almost as if it was like a tam. Now, with a bechor tam, when you're shechting it and bringing it as a korban, you're definitely not allowed to be magdilin. You're not allowed to do mavilin with an animal of kotchim, because the zoyin of kotchim, because, as Rashi explains, what it is part of the process of this mavilin is because you don't want to cut into the skin, because you want to take extra care to keep the skin as intact as possible, the result is you end up cutting into the flesh, into the muscles a lot. And that's the zoyin to the meat of kotchim. So therefore, you're not allowed to do that. Exactly.
The skin,
no, you're trying to separate the skin from the muscles. But you're not dissecting. Well, when you're cutting up an animal for kotchim, you're dissecting it, sure. But we're talking about when you're taking off the skin. Part of the process, when you bring a korban, the skin has to be taken off. But normally they would do it the same way as you do with most animals of chulin. You split it down the middle and then you peel it off. Here what you're doing, and then what you're doing when you're peeling it off, you're putting a knife between the skin and the flesh and cutting through the ligaments that hold the skin to the flesh. Fine. So normally, when you're doing it the normal way, you're not so concerned to make sure that you don't accidentally cut through the skin. Because, okay, you cut through the skin in a couple of places, big deal. So okay, the point is that when you're doing mavilin, when you're trying to peel it off, like you're peeling like you're peeling a banana or like taking off a sweater or something, then you're also trying to take extra care. You don't want to cut into the skin at all. You don't want to cut into the skin at all. So the result is, if you're going to err on the side of caution, you're going to end up cutting into the muscles, and that's a bazillion of punching. So therefore, so by a tam, you're definitely not allowed to do that. But Shammai, who says that a Bechor Baal Mum has, to a certain extent, the Kedusha, as if it was a tam, because that's what they were saying, the comparison before to Chaz of a Shoik is like a tam, then therefore they're going to say that you can't be Magdalen by a Bechor, even when it's a Baal Mum.
Because
it would be a bizarre for Kodshim that you're going to be erring on the side of caution and cutting into the meat rather in order to avoid cutting into the skin. That's what we're saying. It's a point of a shamar.
One second. How can you cut without cutting the skin?
The normal way, you have an animal hanging up in front of you. This way, what you're doing is, you're starting at the neck, usually. You're starting at
the skin, don't you?
Okay, obviously you're cutting the animal's neck when you're shafting it. We're not talking about that. But after that, you want to keep the skin as intact as possible. You want to have the only openings in the skin should be one at the neck end and four at the leg end. So therefore, what you end up doing is when you're peeling off the skin, you're slipping off the skin. Yeah, you're folding it inside out and then peeling it down, and then you're cutting. Yeah, that's what I said, like a sweater. And what you're doing is, in each place, now you have the skin is attached to the muscles by ligaments here and there. You have to cut through those, but it's not always possible to be so accurate that you're going to cut between the skin and the flesh. So you're going to end up erring on the side of cutting into the flesh in order to keep the skin as intact as possible. That's a bazillion for culture. We learned about that, by the way. We had that in Chulin. We talked about, you had something called Olol over there, and we said one explanation of Olol, we said, is Bosser Shaplatatu Sakin. Where we're talking about, when you're skinning an animal, whether you're skinning it like this, or even if you're skinning it in the normal way, sometimes you accidentally cut into the muscles, and you have shreds, you have little bits of flesh, of muscle that remain attached to the skin. So we learned about that. So here you have it even more like that. Okay. So that's why Beth Shammai would say that you can't do it by Bechor. Apparently Beth Hillel wouldn't have a problem with it. Because according to Beth Hillel, once the Baal Mum, it doesn't really have any kedusha anymore. That's why they said you could even feed it to a czar or any kind of tomei, and according to Rabbi Akiva, even to a goy.
But they never said kulak.
No, and actually there is a machloikas among the early achronim whether you're allowed to feed the meat to dogs. The Shach, for example, says no. Some of the other noisy kelim on Shulchan Aruch say yeah. Yeah, okay. Fine. Okay, then we said v'loy b'ksulei amakdashin. We said you're also not allowed to do this magdilin, this turning it inside out and taking it off like a sweater and taking it off by the leg ends, or according to the Rambam, out of one leg particularly. You're not allowed to do that, we said, by p'sulei amakdashin. Man tana, which tana would be the one that says you can't do that? Amen of chister, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon. That would be the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon. It's not, as we learned, Tanya really, it's Braisa, we learn in a Braisa, suppose a person has in front of him two animals for Chatos. Now, the situation was he had originally designated them as one for his actual Chatos and one for Achrayus. We've learned a lot of times already in Kodshim that sometimes you do that. You have to bring a Chatos, so you also set aside another animal as backup in case I can't bring the first one for whatever reason, it gets lost, it develops a mum, et cetera, then I'm going to bring the other one instead. So now, so you designated them for Achrayus, with Achas Tzmim of Achas Balas Mum. One of them ends up remaining a Tumim, the other one ends up developing a Mum. So what do you do? Tmima Tikrab, whichever one is the Tmima, should be brought as the Chatas. which whether it's the first one or the second one, balas mum kipada, and the one that's the balas mum, you redeem it, and the money of it goes to nedava, goes to one of the six pushkas in the Beis Hamikdash that were for nedava, where they use the money for kayit from his bank. That's what we're saying, yeah. Because, yeah, what we're saying is that, the backup one has, in effect, each one has provisional kedusha. Yeah.
So why would someone have backup?
Because he wants to make sure he's going to bring a chatos. We learned earlier in our Masechta, actually, that when a person does an avera that requires them to bring a chatos or an osham, they feel very bad about it. They want to be able to bring the chatos or the osham as soon as possible and be nescaper from the avera. No, it's true they had cattle dealers in Yerushalayim. If you wanted to go to Yerushalayim with money and go to one of the dealers and buy an animal there and you can bring it, fine, you could do that. But many people would just bring their own animals. So therefore they designated for that purpose. That way they have a backup. That way they can be sure they're gonna be able to bring their chatas. So to that extent, right. So if both of them remain chumim, then we would say the second one goes to Nadav. But over here we're talking about one of them developed a mum. So therefore, whichever one developed a mum, you're gonna redeem it from Hekdesh. Now what happens if you shechted the balas mum after it was redeemed? So it depends. Did you do it before or after the other one was brought to the korban? If you did it before the zrikas adam of the other one that was brought to the korban, then muteres, then good, it's muter to eat. In other words, the point is, we're saying, the Tanakama over here is saying, that once you have a heter to shech the second animal because it had a mum, because you redeemed it from hektish, therefore it doesn't have any kedusha left, at least not, it doesn't have any kedusha of korbanos left, and therefore even if you hadn't yet sprinkled the blood of the other one, then it's mutter to eat this one. We don't say that it's still considered, it could have conceivably been the chatas, and it should be considered that it was shechted no good. On the other hand, if you shechted it after the blood of the tmima was sprinkled, then it would be osir b'hanna. Why? Because now it's a situation of chatas shekipru ba'alecha. Now it's one of the five cases of chatas hamesis, where we've learned before, and we'll learn in more detail in Tmura, that you have five cases where an animal that was designated as a chatas has to be locked up and left to die. One of them is chatas shekipru ba'alecha. And that's the situation over here, because you have two animals. One of them you brought as a chatas. The other one is left over. Therefore, no good. It's a chatas shekipru ba'alecha. Because it was designated as a provisional chatas. Yeah.
So once it developed a mum.
Once it developed a mum.
You say there's no kedusha
left. Well, according to the Tanakama. No. So one second. Yeah, but the Tanakama would say that, fine, if you shechted it before, if you shechted it before the zrikas damim of the other one, so even if it was shechted after the other one, but the zrikas adam hadn't taken place yet, that's fine, because you don't even have niskafru ba'alel. Niskafru, when does the kapara happen? By the zrikas. So as long as you don't have niskafru ba'alel, yes, then you're good. But if you had niskafru ba'alel, then you have a problem.
The
one that was brought to the carbon.
What's the problem?
Then you shech the second, and then no good. As soon as you sprinkle the blood of the first one, the second one becomes a chatas hamesa. One second. Rabbi Lazar ben Shimon, whereas Rabbi Lazar ben Shimon disagrees and says, afilu basa b'kedera, never mind that. Even if you have the meat of the balas mum is already in the pot, in other words, not only it was already shechted, but you already cut it up and you already got it ready for cooking, the nizrak dama shel tmima, and then you sprinkle the blood of the tmima, also asura, that meat in the pot is going to become asur, because he says that at the balas mum, even after it was shechted, it still has its original kedusha. Therefore, it's still a chatas shekipru ba'alel. Once you bring the first one, then you have a problem. The second one becomes asur.
You think it's just the opposite? Once the first one is brought, the second one has no kedusha.
No, but that's what we're saying. Well, that's what the Tanakama was saying. That therefore, the Tanakama was saying that as long as you shechted the second one, the balas mum, before you sprinkled the blood of the first one, then you're good. But Rabbi Lazar ben Shimon is saying that not, but the meat of it still retains kedusha afterwards. By the same logic, Rabbi Lazar ben Shimon would say when it comes to psulei amukdashin that you shechted, he still says they have residual kedusha. They're still considered to be that kind of kodshin to a certain extent. Therefore, just like you're not allowed to be marugil by the actual animal you bring as a korban, and we know for sure you can't do that because of bezoyim kodshim, he would say the same thing as far as the psovai makdashim. Again, the chachamim in our braisa would disagree with him.
So, let's recap. When you share the second one before the first one, before the zrika, so the first one,
then according to the Tanakhama, you're good. At that point, then, that's it. Once you shechted it, it has no more kedusha. It has no more kedusha left. Kibin shabos v'chal heter zvika, whereas Rashi says, once it has a heter to be shechted, shuv ein b'kedusha v'balas mum, then it doesn't have any more kedusha.
And if you wait until
after zvika's damim, then no good. Then at that point, it's perhaps kibur b'al area. Okay.
So according to the Tanakhama, when the zvika's of the other one,
If this one is still alive when you do the zrika, if it's already been shechted according to the Tanakhama, you're good. That's what he said. Nishchata actually nizrak dama shal tmimah mutar. If you shechted the balas mum before you sprinkle the blood of the tmimah, then you're okay. If it's still alive at the time of the zrika, the Tanakhama would say it's awesome. Whereas Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon says, not only if it was shechted, does it still have kedusha, but even if you already have the meat in the pot, it can still become awesome. As soon as you do the zrika, it's always going to become awesome. According to Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, the only way it could work is that you would take the balas mum, you'd buy it back from Hekesh, shecht it, eat it, so it's already a done deal, it's gone, and then go bring the tumim as a carbon. Yeah. Okay.
That's the only way out.
That's the only way out. So the question is, why are we saying that the braisa that we mentioned, Ein Margilin, why are we having to say that the part about Bechur and the part about Psula Makdashin is according to two different Tanurim? We're saying Rav Chisda is saying the part about Bechur is according to Beis Shammai, and the part about Psula Makdashin is according to Rav Elazar and Rav Shimon. The question is, Rav Shimon, Loik Makula to Beis Shammai. Why doesn't Rav Chisda say that the whole braisa is going like Beis Shammai? We should assume that the same chumra that Beis Shammai holds as far as Bechur, they would apply to other psula makdashin as well. And in that case, just like they're saying that the Bechur still has kedusha almost as if it were a tam, and therefore you can't be marugil in it, they would say the same thing as far as psula makdashin. What forces Rav Chisda to say that Beis Shammai would hold when it comes to psula makdashin, that they would agree that it's mutter to be marugil and only Rav Elazar ben Shimon? But the reason is because Dilma Ab Kamla Ka'ama Beis Shammai Ela B'Bechur. Because you could argue that maybe according to that Beis Shammai is only saying their din when it comes to a Bechur, which a Bechur has a special feature to Shosta Merechem, because Kaddish as soon as it's born. You don't have to designate it. Avo Psula Amokdashin, they ain't Shosta Merechem. Other Psula Amokdashin, where they don't have the special feature of Kedusha Merechem, therefore Lois, you could argue that even Beis Shammai would say that you're allowed to be Margul with them, that they're not considered to have that same level of Kedusha after they develop a mum and their
shem. Shammai is basically it's more Kedusha
because it's from, exactly. So they wouldn't necessarily say that when it comes to other Psula Amokdashin, whereas Rebbe Elazar ben Shimon will. Okay, so then we could ask the other way around, the Lois Makula to Rav Elazar ben Shimon. Okay, let's go the other way around. Why doesn't Rav Chisda assume that the same din Rav Elazar ben Shimon would say as far as other Psova HaMakdashin, he also says by Bechur. Therefore, we could say the whole Braisa goes like Rav Elazar ben Shimon. It's unusual to have a Braisa that represents, like after the Stam, different opinions of Tanayim. So we have to see why Rav Chisda was forced to say that one part of it is according to Beis Shammai and the other part is according to Rav Elazar ben Shimon. And the answer is Dilma Ab Kamla Ka'amar Rav Elazar ben Shimon Hosam. Fine, but you could argue, on the other hand, maybe Rav Elazar ben Shimon only says Hosam in his case about the Psula Amakdashin, and in the case of the two Chatois Lachrayus El Psula Amakdashin, you could say maybe he applies that din only to Psula Amakdashin Da'alimi Lemit Paskidyonos, because their kedusha is strong enough. As we learned yesterday, you have a concept when you have a kedusha, only when you have a kedusha that's strong enough to be toifis the pidyon, that the kedusha is now able to grab onto the money or whatever it is that you're exchanging for the psula makdashin. So that means it has a stronger level of kedusha in a certain sense. Avo bechur, deloy alam limit the pidyon. On the other hand, a bechur does not have the strength of being able to be toifis its pidyon, because you can't be koda bechur. You can't transfer the kedusha of a bechur onto money like you could with psula makdashin. So therefore, you could argue light. You could argue that maybe just the opposite. And according to him, maybe psula makdashin have a stronger degree of kedusha than bechur.
Seems completely the opposite. If after they have a weaker kedusha, then you should be able to put it.
No, the assumption throughout Shas, and we actually had this yesterday, and we had it in different other places, is that only a strong kedusha only when you have a kedusha. You need a minimum level of kedusha to be redeemed. If you have something that has 2 weeks of kedusha, we learned that yesterday in connection with a miser that was shechted. So when it's 2 weeks to be when you can't be koyder, it means that the kedusha is 2 weeks. To be able to be transferred to something else.
And that's the case with
the Bechor. And that would be the case with the Bechor, apparently, because the fact is you can't be parted
to
a Bechor. As opposed to the Solam Kroshim.
Which
you can be parted to them, right?
Therefore, it proves there's stronger Kedusha than the Bechor.
That's the point. So the laws of Rav Shimon might hold that way, and therefore he would say that this din of his, that the Psula HaMakdashim retain a certain high level of Kedusha, that would apply only to other Psula HaMakdashim. The backup Chatas that we were talking about before, or other ones, not necessarily the Bechor. So that's what forces Rav Elazar, that's what forces Rav Chisda to say that the our Braisa that we quoted, which is about the Ein Margilin, that the part about Bechor can only be according to Beis Shammai, because maybe it could be according to the laws of Reb Shimon, but not necessarily. And the part about Solam Akhtashin can only be definitely according to the laws of Reb Shimon, maybe according to Beis Shammai, but not necessarily. So therefore, that's why he shells it out.
Which part can be like Beis Shammai?
The part about Bechor. So we see clearly that Beis Shammai says that Bechor Baal Mom has a certain residual Kedusha that he can't feed it to all kinds of Tmei. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's why he has to say
the Braita is split, because we don't have any solid reason to say that Beis Shammai would apply their din to other Psula HaMakdashin, or that Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon would apply his din to Bechor. Okay, the question is, what do you mean according to Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon that you're telling me according to him that Psula HaMakdashin you're not allowed to be married to? Now why not? Doesn't he agree with the first Mishnah of our Perek? Kol Psula HaMakdashin Nikarin Be'itliz V'Nishkolin Be'Litra. We said that all Psula HaMakdashin, you're allowed to sell them in a butcher shop, you're allowed to shech them in a butcher shop, you're allowed to weigh them out with a litra, with a regular weight, like you do any other meat.
Proving
Alma. Kivin De'ikar Rav Chala Hekdish. So we see, therefore, that since Hekdesh has a benefit from it, because as you said at the beginning of the parak, when we know in advance that you're going to be able to sell the meat of this Psula HaMakdashin at a higher price, because selling it in the stores and being able to weigh it out normally is going to mean that more people are going to be willing to buy it, and therefore it's going to get a higher price to supply and demand. So therefore we said we allow that, because that benefit ends up going to Hekdesh, in the sense that then when you're going to the Kohen, to the Gizbo, whatever, to redeem the animal from Hekdesh, he's going to calculate, okay, because you're able to sell this meat in an Itliz, and because you're able to weigh it out normally, therefore it's worth more pork per pound, therefore we're going to charge you more for the pidyon of this animal than we would if you were only able to sell it at home and without weighing it, where then it would get less per pound. So therefore we see Alma Kidim de Ikar Rav Chala Hekdesh. So we see because Hekdesh gains a benefit from it, because they gain a higher price from it, Shari Law, so therefore we're allowing it. So why shouldn't it be the same thing over here? If you're able to take off the skin in the Margil way, the skin is going to be worth more money. Because when you take off a skin in the normal way and it's cut down the middle, and you can't use it for a water skin or whatever, you can only use it for other purposes. So therefore, it's going to sell for less. The more versatile something is, the more you can sell it for. So why shouldn't Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon allow it? The same way as we're allowed to sell meat of Psula HaMakdashin in a way that inflates the value of it, because then Hekdesh benefits. Why shouldn't we be able to take off the skin in a way that inflates the value and the benefit will go to Hekdesh? Even though you could argue it's a bizoyan, but it's a bizoyan also to sell it in the marketplace, and yet we allow it. It's relevant because the same way it's a bizoyan to sell the meat in the marketplace and to weigh it out like ordinary meat, and we still allow it because Hekdesh stands to gain from it financially, we should allow the same thing over here as far as the skin. How can Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon say that you can't allow it? The answer is, Omer of Mori, Greater Kahana, yeah, but the difference is, Mashamash, Yach Ba'er, Pogam Ba'baser. Sure, you're gaining something in the value of the skin, but you're losing at least an equal amount with the meat, because you're cutting into the meat, and you're not... That's fine, but nevertheless, some people know, but people also want that a piece of meat should still look nice, that it should be cut into in a bunch of places and look like hamburger.
Yeah,
So therefore, so in other words, the extra value that you would get, the skin, let's say, is going to be worth fine. It's going to be worth, you're losing out on the meat. Yeah, the extra few dollars of the meat that the skin is going to be worth. Yeah, okay.
What's the relevance in our own discussion?
The relevance is, we just said Rav Elazar ben Shimon does not allow you to be ma'ugel b'psulam of gushin, but yet he does allow you to sell it in the marketplace. What's the difference? They're both bezulian. And the answer is because there's a gain without any corresponding loss. Here there's a gain, but it's offset by a loss to the meat.
Fine. And then what?
Therefore, we don't allow that desire. Therefore, we're back to that it's still animal production. It still has a degree of kedusha according to him, and therefore, it would be a bizarre to treat it that way. Okay. The Marova Mishmeid Ravina Amri, it's in
Eretz. Have a degree of kedusha left, but not enough.
Not enough to what? According to the philosophy of Shimon, it has a degree of kedusha to the extent that we said on Amar Aleph that it will still be considered chatas shemei tibala and have the dinim of that. And we're saying, according to him also, that you're not allowed to be marigol. So we're asking, on the face of it, you should be able to be marigol either as a bazillion, but hektish stands to benefit. But the answer is hektish doesn't stand to benefit. So you're breaking even. The Marova Mishmeid Ravina Amri, in the West, which means Eretz Yisrael, they said in the name of Ravina, the reason why is because it looks like you're doing work with kodshin, because it's a bigger design. Because it looks like this, look at that, you're already selling the skin for a particular purpose, to make into a water skin while it's still even on the animal. So that's a bigger design. It's not just a matter of you're cutting into the muscles, it's a matter of like as if the whole animal is only worthwhile for the skin. Rabbi Yossi Ba'oven says a different reason. The reason is because you might end up raising herds and herds of such animals. In other words, if you're allowed to wait, because you might want to figure, okay, I'm going to wait to shech this animal until somebody comes by who needs a complete skin, and only then am I going to shech the animal. Meanwhile, you might raise whole herds of these animals, psulam of dushin, and you're going to have the problem that you may end up forgetting that they're psulam of dushin and shear them and work with them. We had this discussion before, right? Now, this last part that we said, the Ma'arava Amri and Rabbi Yossi Ba'oven Omar, which part of the Gemara is this referring to? The Rashi says this is going all the way back to before. When we said before, we brought before the bride to also the Hargo. And we said also the Hargo Yomtev, the Bechor, or the Solam Akdashin. We said, Rav Chista had said that the Braitha goes partly according to Beit Shammai and partly according to Rav Shimon ben Elazar, according to Rav Elazar ben Rav Shimon. Now comes in the Ma'arava, and Rabbi Yossi Ba'odin, and say, no, you don't have to say that. You could say that the Braitha is like everybody, and the reason why we're not going to allow you to be marigol is for one of these two reasons. Either because it's a bigger bizoyan than other kinds of, it's an even bigger bizoyan than we argued before, or because you might raise adorim of it. In other words, therefore, it doesn't have to be only according to Beit Shammai. Even Beit Hillel might agree by Bechor, you can't be marigol for one of these reasons. When it comes to Psalm of Kashan, not only Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon would say that, even the Chachamim would say that, and therefore that would be the halacha. Therefore, the halacha would be that price. Because it's a greater bizoyan, or because you might raise herds and herds of them.
Nothing to do with kedusha.
Well, it has to do with kedusha, but another point is that we're not going to allow you to do it because you're not allowed to, even if it doesn't have as much kedusha, but still, it looks like you're doing work with them. While the animal is alive, where you're not allowed to do work with it, you're already selling the skin off its back, or you're going to raise herds and herds of them, and you're going to forget and do giz of avodah. So according to Rashi, it comes out, therefore, that the halacha is actually like that braisa. Because what we're saying is the braisa does not have to be only according to the Shammai or according to the Elazar ben Shimon. It can be according to everybody. On the other hand, and therefore, so that would mean then that you can't be ma'ugel by b'chor by psalam of Dushan. The Rambam, on the other hand, understands that these two things, Ma'arava Amri and Rabbi Yosef Ben Omer, are just referring back to the Elazar ben Shimon's reading. The reason why that we said one reason why Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon wouldn't allow you to be marigil is because yes, you stand to gain, you're gaining something in the value of the skin, but you're losing a compensating amount in the flesh. And here, the Ma'arava Amri and Rabbi Yosef Ben are giving two other reasons why Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon would not allow it by Psalm of Dushan. One because the bigger bizayin, and one because you might raise Adorim Adorim a bit. Tosfos doesn't say one way or the other, but So you have Rashi and you have the Rambam. So Rashi learns it the way that these are going back to explain the Braitha, Because Rashi, I guess, understands that we shouldn't just assume that we're trying to explain Rav Elazar ben Shimon's reasons. I mean, these reasons could work according to the Chachamim also. Whereas the Rambam understands that they still are only meant to explain Rav Elazar ben Shimon. Therefore, the Rambam paskins that you would be allowed to be margul by a b'chor. In Shulchan Aruch, it brings only the understanding of Rashi. So it just says flat out, ein margulin b'chor, period. Because we're saying that the halacha is like that, right? So when it comes to Psula Mokdoshin, okay, we don't have Psula Mokdoshin nowadays. They are the Posek Achron, in effect, is the Rambam, and he passed in that would be allowed. So Limoy Tzal Mashiach, there's a Hilch Tzal Mashiach. When Mashiach comes, then the Sanhedrin can look it over and decide whether to understand like Rashi or the Rambam. But that's Hilch Tzal
Mashiach.
Well, this is also true.
Okay.
Mishnah says, B'chor Sha'och Zeydam, a B'chor that was seized by blood, which means basically it has high blood pressure or something like that, and the refuah for that in those days at least was to do bloodletting to remove some blood from it. Well, that's the thing. So, not necessarily, but so a few mess. So the Tanakhama says, Rabbi Yehuda says, even if the animal is going to die, if you don't let blood, ein mekizin loydam, you're still not allowed to do bloodletting, even if it's in a place that's not going to make a mum. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. We'll explain why in a second. The Chachamim Omen, the Chachamim say no, Yakiz, you are allowed to do bloodletting for the animal, provided that you don't make a mum in the course of doing that. For example, don't cut its ear or its lip or whatever, things like that are not going to heal. But for example, you can make a puncture somewhere else on the body where it will heal. Now, why do Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim argue? So Rashi brings from a Gemara in Tzachim. That like this. Rabbi Yehuda takes the view that we know there's a concept called Adam Bohol al Mamon. A person is in a panic because of his Mamon. Like this, he has a Bechor. We're talking, let's say, the Koyan over here, where once the animal develops a Mum, he's going to be able to shecht it and eat it. But if it ends up dying without ever developing a Mum, then if he's going to have to bury it, it's going to be also Bahano. So Rabbi Yehuda takes the view, Adam Bohol al Mamon. Therefore, if you allow him to do it in a place where it's not going to make a mum, he may be in such a hurry and in such a panic to do it quickly before the animal dies that he may end up doing it in a place where it's going to make a mum. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda disallows it. The Chachamim say, on the contrary, because Bohol al Mamon, the Chachamim say, if you don't allow him at all, then for sure he's going to end up in a panic. He's going to go and he wants to save his animal, and he's going to end up doing it in a place that where it can make a mum. Better you should allow him to do it, and that way he'll have the presence of mind to say, okay, I'll make sure to do it in a place where it won't make a mum. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Also by mum, suppose that in the course of bloodletting for the animal, he did end up making a mum. Then you're not allowed to shecht the b'chor based on that mum. Because the fact is, you made that mum. So you have to wait until it develops a different mum. And only then can you shecht it. Reb Shimon Omer, Yakiz Achvishu Oitha Ben Mum. Reb Shimon says that no, you can do the hakaza even if it's in a place that makes a mum, because it's Dover Shein Meskavin, and Reb Shimon holds throughout Shas that Dover Shein Meskavin is mutter. What? No, not because it's Fab Alachim. He says because Dover Shein Meskavin is mutter. We have throughout Shas. He says it in Hilchos Shabbos.
Only
not one psik resha, but over here it's not necessarily psik resha, because you could do it in other places in the body.
Even though you know it's
in the... No, you have to show it's a mum. Yeah, even if it's a place where it ends up making a mum. Because let's say, even for example, you do it in the ear or the lip or whatever, it's not necessarily going to make a mum. It might, you know, it depends how big the split is or whatever. Yeah. Okay. Turn it up on us. So we learn in a brisa. B'chor sha'och dam makizim lo'yitha dam b'makom chain oisim ben mum. A b'chor that has high blood pressure. You're allowed to do bloodletting in a place where it's not going to make a mum. The ein makizim lo'yitha dam b'makom chain oisim ben mum. But you're not allowed to do the hakaza in a place where it will create a mum. Divrei Rav Meir. So Rav Meir is the chachamim of our Mishnah. The chachamim say you could even do it in a place where it is going to make a mum, as long as you don't shecht it. In other words, Rashi says, we're talking about the chachamim would say, obviously don't haschila go and do it in a place just because, but if it so happens, if the veterinarians tell you or whatever that you have to do it in that place, in that particular aver, then go ahead and do it in that aver, even though it's going to create a mum, just but then you can't shecht it based on that mum, because the fact is you made that mum. Even though it was beheter, but it was still yam. Reb Shimon says you're even allowed to shecht it based on that mum, as he said in our Mishnah, because Dov Hashem is Kavan Mutter. Okay, now that's the point. Once it has a mum, you're allowed to shecht it. Reb Shimon says, even though you made the mum, because you made the mum beheter, then it's allowed. Then you don't have to wait for a different mum. Reb Yehuda is machmir, like he is in our Mishnah. No, even if the animal is going to die, you cannot do hakalza, because as we said, the person might be in a panic and he might end up doing it in a place where it's going to make a mum. Okay, so those are the different opinions. So we have basically the same opinions as in our Mishnah, except we have one extra opinion. We have one extra opinion of the mayor that you can only do it in a place where you can't do it in a place where oisin b'mum. It's similar to the Chacham of our Mishnah, but it's not identical. Okay, fine. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Lozer taught his son as follows. Others say that Rabbi Chiya taught his son. Rabbi Chiya Ba'aba, Hashita Mukhabasa says, taught his son. The same kind of machloikas we have over here, where if you don't do something, the animal is going to die. And the question is, can you do something to save it, even though it might create a mum? We have a similar machloikas when it comes to a barrel of truma. It's not, as we learn in a Mishnah in Truma, if you have a barrel of, let's say, wine or oil, whatever, of Truma, where you have a Sopik Truma in it, you're not sure if it became Tomei or not, so what do you do with it? Now, if it's Tahor, you're allowed to drink it. If it's Tomei, you're not allowed to. So what do you do with it? Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Im Hoysev HaMokam HaTurpa, so Rabbi Eliezer says, if it was in an open area where it's not safe, where it's not locked away, you should put it in a hidden away place where it'll be safe. And if it was uncovered, you have to cover it, because in other words, Rabbi Eliezer is saying, even though there's a sopik truma in it, you still have to treat it as though it was truma tahora. And truma tahora, you have a mitzvah to guard it. Or not bury it. He says, in other words, that you have to treat it for that purpose as if it was Baba, as if it was definitely Tahar. So therefore, if you found it uncovered, you have to cover it. And if you found it out in your yard, let's say, you have to put it away safely in your house. You can't drink it because there's a sulfur on it, but you still have to treat it for that purpose as if it was Tahar. Rabbi Yeshua says the other way around. Now, if it was in an open place, if it was in a hidden place, you're allowed to put it in an open area. You don't have to do shmira of it anymore. And if it was uncovered, if it was covered, you're allowed to cover it. Because, in other words, Rabbi Yeshua is saying, look, you can't eat it because it might be tamei. On the other hand, you can't, Rashi mentions, there's another possibility. You could have done ziluf with it, which is that you take it and you use it to sprinkle around your house to make a nice smell in the house or whatever. They used to do that in those days with wine. You can't do that because it might be tahor. So what do? Uncover it or put it out in an open area or whatever. That way it's more likely to become tahor. And then at least you'll be able to do something with it like this. You're completely stuck. Yeah, let's say, for example, you sprinkle it around on the floor or whatever, to make a nice smell in the house. You'll be careful that none of it will get on food. Let's say, drink sometimes only food. Midrabanan, certain mashkin can retame kalim as well, fine, but okay. So again, Rabbi Eliezer is saying that you have to still protect it as if it was real truma. That might mean it's never going to become badai truma, and you might never be able to do anything with it. Doesn't matter. You still have to guard it just as if it was regular truma. Rabbi Yeshua is saying just the other way around. Get it into a situation where it will definitely become truma. Then at least you can do something with it. You can do ziluf with it. You'd be allowed to, but the point is, even truma tmeya, you're allowed to have hana from it. So the hana can be, in the case of wine, would be zivu. If it was oil, it would be that you could burn it. Rabban Gamliel, I'm a loy chadash bodover, and Rabban Gamliel says, don't do anything. Wherever it is right now is where you leave it. If it's in an enclosed area, leave it in the enclosed area. It's in an open area, leave it in that open area, etc. Rabban Gamliel just says, leave it alone. So Rabbi Lozer or Rabbi Chiya is saying, you have a similar machloikas as in our Mishnah. Rabbi Meir Kribaliyazer, Rabbi Meir of our Braisa, who says that you can do hakaza, on this animal, that on this bechor, but not in the place that's going to make a mum. He would be like Rabbi Eliezer, that you still have to be careful not to make a mum in it, even though on the face of it, you could argue it already has a mum because it's already going to die from this high blood pressure. Nevertheless, the mayor would be saying like Rabbi Eliezer, that you still have to try as much as possible not to make another mum in it, just like Rabbi Eliezer is saying over there, you have to try as much as possible not to allow it to become tamei. The Rabbanon could have Yeshua. The Rabbanon who say that you could even, in the Braisa, who say that you could even do hakaza in a place where it's going to make a mum, they would be like Rabbi Yeshua, who says that you're allowed to put the barrel in such a place where it will become tamei. But Rabbi Yehuda, Kenan Gamliel, and Rabbi Yehuda in the Braisa, who says that you're not allowed to do anything, even if it's going to die, you can't do anything to it. He would be like Rabbi Gamliel, who says just leave the barrel exactly where it is. Okay, so it's my out of time now. We'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, and we'll see whether that equation actually necessarily holds true.